Hi, and thanks for tuning in to Sunday Morning. I'm Nathan Scott. In the studio with me today is David A. Greenberg from the League for People with Disabilities. He's the president and CEO here today to talk with us a little bit about the work that the League has done and is looking to do in the future. David, thank you so much for coming in.
Good morning.
So for anyone who's not aware of the work that the League for People with Disabilities does, some of it's in the name, but can you tell me what specific work the League does and what sort of disabilities you deal with?
Sure. The League for People with Disabilities has been around a long time, 92 years. Originally, we started out as a polio agency, providing all kinds of services. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, the polio of our day is autism. Hmm. So a lot of what we do centers around children with autism and adults with autism. But we take care of people with all kinds of disabilities, mostly through day programming and community events.
Now, you mentioned that autism is the polio of our day. Polio, of course, being something that still happens on occasion, but is much less widespread than it used to be. What are some of the misconceptions that people may have about autism that, if shattered, would enable them to better interact with people who are on the spectrum?
Well, I think it starts with the fact that it's a spectrum, and there are people who are very impaired, and there are people who are highly intelligent but yet still impaired because they're socially awkward. People with autism, what I've learned is it's really a communication disorder. It's how they express themselves, how individuals express themselves, and as society learns more about working with people with autism, society, I think, has gotten better at helping individuals with autism get employed, have meaningful lives, and supporting their families. But I mention it being the polio of our day in that back in the teens, 20s, 30s, 40s, before the Salk vaccine and they figured out polio, we're in that stage now where we haven't figured autism out. Is it genetic? Is it environmental? And all that. And it may be a combination. Who knows? We're not into the research aspect, but I'm so glad here in the Baltimore area, a lot of this research is going on. Uh-huh. And eventually, it'll get figured out. But as people discover, oh, wow, such and such had a child who's just been diagnosed with autism, or this person's just recently been diagnosed. It was like that with polio, as I've talked to folks who've been involved with that. Mm-hmm. Every time you turn around, somebody else is waking up and their feet aren't working. But yet there were successes with polio. Look at President Roosevelt, FDR,
right.
that he was able to run for president and become president all while under the effects of polio and the devastating effects for him that were physically devastating. So we have this issue of autism in our society that there are many programs, and Maryland provides the state provides funding for families of children with autism so that it's more wraparound services. All the schools have services for children with autism, but many of the agencies like ours have after school programs and camping programs and other programs for children with autism.
Now, can you tell me, you mentioned that there are a lot of programs in Maryland that deal with this, which is a good thing, but what are some of the things that make the League different from those other programs?
Sure. Well, I just mentioned camp, but we run a camp that's been running since 1937, which originally started out again as a polio camp.
Uh-huh.
Now it's a camp for people with all kinds of disabilities, but especially the children who come there, have a lot of them have autism, so we've had to adapt. But there aren't many. I think there's three camps in the entire state for children and adults with disabilities. Ours is right across the road from Camp David in the Catoctin Mountains, called Camp Greentop.
just a gorgeous area.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. And we get support from the National Park Service. They actually own the camp, and we rent it every summer since 1937, except for World War II, when the Marines took it over for a few years and we had to go up to Pennsylvania. But so besides Camp Greentop, we have a wellness center and a pool at the league. We're at Cold Spring in the Alameda in North Baltimore, mm-hmm. between Morgan and Loyola, for the listeners who want a more visual.
Right.
But this wellness center, it's like a YMCA for people with disabilities and for the local community. It's an inclusive place. It really works well for families if you want to bring your child or your elderly parent, somebody, you know, with you, has a disability. Well, you both can go to the gym and work out, or use this amazing swimming pool that we have, a half Olympic size warm water therapy pool, mm-hmm. that people with arthritis, actually children with autism, do incredible in that, when that warm water envelops them. It's a wonderful resource to have. Yeah. All of our programs, whether it's a medical day program that we run, our vocational services, our after-school autism program, and several others, they all use this wellness center, mm-hmm. because it's part of the therapy of life.
Right.
I like to say we don't fix autism or cerebral palsy or head injuries or spinal cord injuries. We help people live better with, mm-hmm. that disability.
And really, a lot of the social awkwardness that you talked about, mm-hmm. in dealing with people who have these sorts of disabilities, a lot of what gets people over that, and I'm talking about people who don't have disabilities, is just being around those sorts of people, learning that, you know, they're also a part of your community, and learning to interact with them where they're at, and also they can begin to interact with you where you're at. Just,
yes.
a fantastic opportunity to build community. For those people who can't make it to the center, though, do you also have options for people who maybe can't get out of their home?
We do. We have some programs that for children as well as adults, that, mm-hmm. where we will go into a home and provide community supports to help them, again, live better with their disability, mm-hmm. or to take them out of the home and go into the community to give their caregivers a break.
Right.
And I always like to point out, not just giving the caregivers a break, you're giving that individual that you're serving a break from their caregiver.
Well, yeah. I think any family dynamic, I certainly need a break from my family every now and again.
We all do.
So, you know, I find with a lot of charity work that the reason that people who work in it work in those fields is because they have, you know, generally a personal connection to it. Now, whether that's a family member of their own or some other experience earlier in their life, you know, you certainly don't enter nonprofit work for the money. So,
right, exactly.
Could you perhaps tell me a little bit about your path to the league and how things have changed since you got there?
Yes. I took an interesting path. I'm a registered nurse. I'm still a registered nurse in the state of Maryland. It's my backup plan in case I did lose my administrative capabilities. Mm-hmm. But so I've worked in healthcare for all my career. And I was working at Mount Washington Pediatric Hospital in 2006 or 7, mm-hmm. when a friend told me about this job as CEO at the league. And I looked into it, and I was very curious what it was that the league does, kind of like your listeners who might not know what the league,
right.
does. So I went to the website, and leagueforpeople.org, it's still there, and was looking at the different programs that they have, and I still couldn't quite get. I said, "But who runs these? Are these doctors? Are they therapists? Who? What is the staff?" So I clicked on the human resources section, employment section, mm-hmm. and I didn't get very far when I saw it said CEO position available. Click here to apply.
Right.
So that's how I ended up at the league. It was just a great fit because while I quickly learned, the league is not healthcare, mm-hmm. it's life care. We help people live well with their disabilities.
What are some of the ways in which your experience in the healthcare profession have maybe come in handy as the CEO for the league?
Yeah. Well, we do employ nurses there, so I'm able to be a backup nurse there as that's needed. But it also has helped. We've started a few health-related programs or connected with them, such as a program for people who have difficulty speaking after a stroke. It's that's called our SCALE aphasia program, SCALE being the Snyder Center for Aphasia Life Enhancement. And people don't realize, I think everybody everybody knows what aphasia is. They don't know the term aphasia, which is a very difficult word, and I yell at speech therapists all the time. Why would you call it aphasia? But because it's so hard to say and I understand. But it's essentially, if you have a stroke on the left side of your brain, your right side's going to be affected. So a lot of people who have right-sided hemiparesis, so the right arm, the right legs aren't working well, will have difficulty speaking, and words out talk. They know what they want to say. It can't get to their lips.
It's very fragmented.
Yes. Or sometimes they don't speak at all, or sometimes it's jumbled. A great example, unfortunate example, is Gabby Giffords, the
Congresswoman
who was shot in the left side of her head, severely damaged her whole speech center. And since then, she has had a lot of therapy. And the only time you will hear her is after she's practiced and practiced. She can't speak fluently, couldn't have this kind of conversation.
Right.
I fear that so much because I couldn't do this job with that disability.
Right. I mean, but same. I talk for a living.
Exactly. So, but yet, the interesting thing is it doesn't affect your intellect. So you would know everything. You just can't get it out. So that is a great challenge. But another, going back to your question, another program we started, again, out of the healthcare market, was people who live with multiple sclerosis. We have an MS Day program that helps individuals to live better with their MS, to get connected. Lots of folks with MS no longer can do the jobs that they were doing, maybe can't work any longer, but they still have that need to connect.
Right.
So we will pull those individuals together to do that. And that's the same going back to the aphasia, our SCALE program, that both of those programs, if you don't work hard at it, it can lead to depression. It's very isolating when you are not with people who understand what you're going through.
And this is one of the reasons why community is so important, because I think something that probably frustrates a lot of healthcare professionals is the assumption that you go to the doctor's office, they work some magic, and then everything is okay. But whether it be with the multiple sclerosis or the I'm not going to be able to pronounce
aphasia.
The word. Aphasia. Thank you. These are things that you're not going to be able to overcome without A, effort that is going in on your own part, and then B, the support of people around you to keep you from getting down to yourself those days when you may be discouraged. Yep. And that sort of positive feedback is something that the league can provide. If you're just tuning in, my name is Nathan Scott. You're listening to Sunday Morning, and I'm speaking with David A. Greenberg, the president and CEO of the League for People with Disabilities, located right here in Baltimore off of East Cold Spring Lane. So we've talked about two of the programs that you run, those being SCALE and MS Day. But there's a more unique program that you've got. It's a nightclub experience. I'm really intrigued. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Sure. We have a nightclub for people with disabilities and without. It's an inclusive club. Anybody can come to it. So all the listeners listening, please come on out. But the second Saturday every month, we run we've coined Club 1111 because we're at 1111 East Cold Spring Lane. It was started, we'll be coming up on 5 years in January of 2020. It will be our fifth anniversary. So more than 4.5 years, we've been operating this club the second Saturday every month. So we operate it every month. The club was started as a fundraiser with the hope of at each club we'd raise about $10,000 of sponsorships. We had difficulty getting enough sponsors. We got some sponsors, but getting a regularity of sponsors. So from a fundraising perspective, it was not real successful. But once we started it, I think the first club we had maybe 100, 130 people. Next club we had about 250. The third month we did it, we were pushing about 380.
Wow.
At our peak, I think we had 720, 740 came to that club.
Yeah.
Now we regularly get 500 to 700 people every month to this club. We had one last week and last Saturday, we had, it was our Halloween club because it's October.
Right.
And we had 604 people showed up, probably half of them in costume. It was a great night. This club is really for people, really focused on people with developmental disabilities who are just not comfortable going out to your typical nightclub,
right,
where people might look at them and, you know, look at that person in a wheelchair, look at that person who seems to be very spastic because they have cerebral palsy.
Mm-hmm.
There's no judgments at this club. Mm-hmm. We have two dance floors, a mocktail lounge because we're not serving alcohol because of the extra, a lot of the folks are on meds.
Mm-hmm.
We have a spa that you can get little fake tattoos or you get your nails done. And there's a game room, the cornhole game, some basketball, foosball, that sort of thing. And there's a spot for everybody. And I'm just amazed that we were talking earlier about people on the spectrum.
Right.
There's people who are blind, people who are deaf, people who don't have anything wrong with them, wheelchairs, every kind of disability you could think of is coming to that club. And people just making these social connections.
Right. And I would imagine there are some changes to the nightclub experience, things that aren't there. For example, if you're dealing with people who are on the spectrum or may have disabilities, you may not want to have particularly loud music or strobe lights, which are things a lot of people associate with that scene. Yeah. What are some of the other ways that you make it well-suited for all types of people?
Yeah. Interestingly, we do have loud music,
really?
And we do have strobe lights, but we have places where there isn't loud music,
okay. And
there aren't the strobe lights. But so you tend to gravitate to where you want. We have a beautiful facility right there at Cold Spring in the Alameda, 44,000 square feet, probably using about 30,000 for this nightclub. So it allows us to have the various rooms that can allows people to kind of decompress or to go wild. Well, interestingly, we have a nurse on staff and invariably at every club, she has to provide some support because people will get so excited they overheat themselves or may have a seizure because a lot of people with disabilities do have a seizure disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And just to provide the support and call 911 if that's
right.
needed. Last couple clubs we haven't had to call 911. It's for a while there we had some clubs where call 911 twice. So. We try to keep people hydrated and calm.
Well, it's good to hear that things are going well, and also that you really do have, because you can separate those two sorts of experiences for people who can deal with that,
yes.
and people who can't. You're able to have all types of people who enjoy all types of nightclub experiences at Club 1111.
Right.
So we've talked a lot about play, but work is an important part of people's lives as well. And you mentioned earlier that one of the services that the league provides is placing people with disabilities in jobs, or if not
yes.
placing them, then assisting them with finding that employment. Can you tell me a little bit about what that process looks like? How you get someone from potentially very socially awkward to being able to interact with other people in a workplace environment.
Sure. really, a lot of it depends on the funding source. The, mm-hmm. the Department of Rehab Services, which is a subset of the Maryland State Department of Education, they fund us to do job evaluations and get people placed into jobs and keep them in their job for finite periods. Mm-hmm. The Developmental Disabilities Administration will fund individuals with developmental disabilities, and that's people who have acquired their injury or were born with their injury. So they acquired the injury before age 21 or they were born with it. They help us to support individuals once they get a job for the life of the individual, because they know the importance of it, and they want the individual to be as independent as possible for their entire lives. But we will, going back, we will do an evaluation on individuals, mm-hmm. figure out what do they want to do. Then we will work with employers or other agencies who have positions in the particular skill set that the individual want, that they want, and that the person wants to do.
Right.
Since we've been doing the Club 1111, we've been talking about, there's a lot of people who want to be DJs, and there's only so many DJ jobs. I'll put that out there. So, but we do, we work with family-owned businesses as well as big corporations, you know, Home Depot and Lowe's, mm-hmm. and those places. Whether somebody is good at doing stock work or in organizing, which many people on the spectrum are, but just finding out the right position, because it's not all just, you know, food service and florist shops and housekeeping. That there's many other, it's almost unlimited nowadays, what's available in the job market. And there are positions out there. So we are good at figuring out what does the person want to do and what does the employer need, and then putting the two of those together.
Now, one thing that's not unlimited, unfortunately, is space. And I understand that there are some growing pains going on at the league, maybe some ways in which you'd like to expand but don't necessarily have the room or the square footage to make that happen. Can you tell me a little bit about what plans you have going into the future and why you need more space?
Sure. I think with the success of growing our business, we're going through the growing pains of that success, having no parking for people coming to check the league out, or even just coming for services. They're just parking was a huge problem. Thanks to the governor, we got mm-hmm. a grant, and we were able to purchase a couple houses right next to the league and begin expanding on parking. That's given us a little bit of breathing room, but we continue to need additional space for offices, mm-hmm. For those. A lot of our programs are out in the community, but they still need to be managed. So we're looking at some work from home opportunities, mm-hmm. as we also look at how can we get a little bit more office space, a little bit more programming space. Because anybody who comes by, and I invite anybody who wants to contact me, you'll get the information at the end of the show. Mm-hmm. But to tour through, and you'll see that we are busting at the seams. So we have a conceptual plan to put a three-story building right mm-hmm. next connected to the league that would allow us to expand both in office space as well as in programming space, because we have a lot of offices that if they weren't offices, it would be great for programming, mm-hmm. but where are you going to move those functions to? Because we still have to do payroll, you know, do our fundraising, right. Do the mandatory financial management that any nonprofit would have to. So all that still has to occur.
Now, you've been with the league for just a little bit past a decade now. 10 years is a long span of time, especially in the life of a nonprofit. A lot can change for better or for worse. It sounds like it's mostly for the better. Over the course of that decade, what are some of the things that have impacted you the most about working at the league?
I am moved every day by what we do and the individuals that we serve. When I sit in my office, and I would hate to not have an office within the league because I would lose connection. what's impacted me the most is the individuals that we're serving. Mm-hmm. They're so upbeat, and they're so much more upbeat than even our staff and management, who are, our staff are fantastic, managers excellent, but the individuals that we're mm-hmm. serving, they've been dealt such a difficult hand and such challenges, and they are more positive than the typical population. It just astounds me, and that moves me. I've got the greatest job in the world. I'm still appreciative to the board that continues to employ me and allow me to have this great job, because the great management and staff and supervisors that we have, they do a great job in keeping that league running, keeping the individuals motivated, advancing, living meaningful lives.
So if people have heard this program and they're excited about the work that you're doing, and they want to either join in themselves or support you financially, or you know, they have additional resources as far as space is concerned that they could be of help with, you never really know.
Right.
What are some of the best ways for them to A, get involved, and B, get in contact?
Yep. I would say going to our website, leagueforpeople.org, you get all of our programs, all the connections are there. I think you can click and get more information to connect with me. So I would love to hear from anyone. Mm-hmm. We get calls all the time. More recently, over the past year, since the Baltimore Sun covered Club 1111, we get calls. Huh. I got a call today from an email from a place in India that I hadn't heard of, but when I went on Google, it was 3 hours outside of Mumbai. But internationally, we get notified because people are moved by what Club 1111 has done.
Huh.
Because it's become kind of viral and on
right.
all a
it
lot
was
of,
front page, if I'm not mistaken.
It was front page of news. Yep. It was below the fold, and it was one of those few times when you're on the front page and it's not bad.
So, right.
So but people wanting to know how to get Club 1111 operating in there. So I have this dream that there will be a Club 1111 India, Club 1111 Los Angeles, Sacramento, Hawaii, Florida.
Some chapters popping up everywhere.
Everywhere. Because I think anybody could do this. We're servicing Baltimore and the Maryland area, but there's many other parts of the country that need to be doing this. But again, go to leagueforpeople.org, check out all of our programs. Want to get involved, want to volunteer. We use about 30 volunteers at every club. And we have to close it out. More people want to volunteer than we have spaces for. So let us know. We would love to get more people involved, get more people knowing about the great work that the staff of the League for People that they do.
All right. Well, David, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you. Appreciate
I've been speaking with David Greenberg, the president and CEO for the League for People with Disabilities, located at 1111 East Cold Spring Lane in Baltimore. If you'd like more information, their website, leagueforpeople.org. I'm Nathan Scott. Thanks so much for tuning in. And until next time, have a great day.